On today's episode, how you can scale growth and impact as you plan the architecture of your business.
Are you a leader trying to get more from your business and life? Me too. So join me as I document the conversations, stories, and advice to help you achieve what matters in your life. Welcome to Unbound with me, Chris Dubois.
Beata Chalette is the growth architect and founder of The Woman's Code and provides visionaries and leaders with proven strategies, blueprints, and growth maps that provide clear steps to improve business systems, strengthen leadership skills and teams so that our clients and audiences can maximize profits and scale their impact. She is the podcast host of the Business Growth Architect Show and listed amongst the top 100 global thought leaders by PeopleHub and one of the 50 must-follow women entrepreneurs by HuffPost. Beata, welcome to Unbound.
I'm so excited to be here, Chris. I can't wait.
Yeah. This episode has been a long time coming.
Oh my gosh. Yes. But they say all things that take time are good, right?
Yeah. And so here we are. Let's jump right into your origin story.
Well, you know, I've been in the creative arts my entire life. So I started out as a photographer, realized pretty quickly that I was better at the business side of things. And then took my creative talents and helped visionaries and thought leaders in the simplest way to land planes, because I've always found it very painful when you see these colorful, non-conforming, crazy, intelligent, smart, talented people, and then they can't for the life of it land a plane, you know, and then they circle their plane and they circle their plane. And eventually they crash and burn. So I've been helping really people to grow their authority and scale their impact. And my impact is measured in how many people I help make their impact. So people who typically come to me are, you know, people that want to, that have ideas and they need to figure out a business model, or they need to figure out what their differentiation factor is in their signature growth system, or they need to figure out what their plan is. And I was a photo editor at Elle Magazine, went to the United States, immigrated, became a photographer representative and still photography production company. Then I lost everything. You know, I had what we call the decade of bad luck, built up a stock photography syndication for architecture, interior, and celebrity homes, a licensing business, licensed this into 97 countries, and that's a company that I eventually sold for Bill Gates for millions of dollars and had a really nice exit.
Awesome. So first question is, I guess, why growth architect?
So when I think about what business owners commonly struggle with, it is the idea that they're so unique. So yes, you're extremely unique, but the way businesses are built is pretty predictable. There are many different business models, and we can customize these business models, but the components are not different. So it's like architecting growth, if you want to. So I want you to imagine that when you build a house, right? That's why I came to the term growth architect. You have to build a foundation. You know, foundation, no bueno. It's not good. Then you need to decide, how many people need to live in this house? Are you looking for 1,000 square foot? Is it a cabin? Is it a getaway? Is it a second home? Is it the main residence? Is the mother-in-law going to be there? What are all the things that need to go in this house? That's deciding the house. And you need to look at the style of the house. What fits you? Is it a Victorian, a modern? Is it a contemporary? Is it a traditional, a townhouse? What is it? And then you know, once you've sort of built these parameters, then we go to the furnishings. I mean, are we going to go high end? Are we going to take cooler appliances and the Miele, whatever, $5,000 washing machine? Are you going to put the General Electric $500 washing machine in? So there's a lot of decisions that you need to make to architect the way you want to live. So there's a lot of decisions you need to make on how to architect how you want to work. And that's why I decided to call it growth architecture.
Right. Now, I bet there's a lot of questions you're asking, excuse me, that business owners haven't really thought about at that point, even if they could be years down the road, mm-hmm. right, having run their business. And they just haven't thought about these things because they didn't necessarily
prep, I guess, for the business. They were probably good at something. Maybe they built something. They said, oh, I can turn this into a business. And they started executing. So what kind of things are you actually asking them, like business-wise, right, in order to get them thinking the right way?
Chris, I'm going to ask the most shocking of all questions first. What do you want? And then typically I get kind of a, funny that you asked that. I've been wondering the same thing. So if I look at this question, which is really relatively simple. So when your wife asks you, well, Chris, what do you want? Then you go, what do I want? Well, I want you to love me. I want you to respect me. I want you to care for me. I want phenomenal intimacy. I want connection. I want us, you know, if you choose to have children, to be excellent parent. I want us to have good communication. So you kind of like start thinking through the list. When you have a business and somebody says, what do you want? People don't know what they can ask for, because the business code, the existing business code, how it is written, says you're going to have to work hard and a lot. You have to sacrifice everything. You should be lucky if your wife will still talk to you in 5 years while you go through the building stage of this, and your children recognize you. And it comes at a high price, but that's the only way you can make money. So that's what we've been programmed to think. So now if I say, what do you want? It's almost a contradictory question to the parameters that we've been told that we can have. You know, son, you know, if you want that house, you got to work really hard and you got to be really committed and you got to be really focused on that, because I had to work really hard and you have to work really hard and my father had to work really hard. Okay, so we are programmed in our DNA to believe a certain set of predetermined assumptions that other people have. And now somebody comes and says, what do you want? And it renders us helpless. So the first question really is, and this is, you know, a question for all your listeners right now. What is it that you want? Do you want balance? Do you want to grow your business through speaking, through podcasting? Do you want to get your leads through Facebook ads, through Google ads? Do you want to get your leads by networking events? Are you going to join Provisors or BNI or entrepreneur organization? Or how are you going to building these connections to get you the business? That's one decision. Another decision is, what's your conversion? Are you going to be making the phone calls, or somebody else is going to be making the phone calls? So there's so many micro decisions to say, what do you want this business to actually look like so it does work for you? And then if you're in it, what works and what doesn't work? Because there always is a point of where, in order to get the freedom you got in entrepreneurship in the first place, there has to be a point where you have to make yourself obsolete and systematize what you do so these components can be taught to other people that are then subject matter experts in these smaller categories. But that only works if you actually allow somebody like me, you know, that's one of the things that we do, is the signature growth system I talked about, where I crawl into your head, I pull the pieces out with you, we organize them, and then we can determine, oh, that's a sales position, that's an operational position, that is a customer service, that is that's the piece that you and only you keep, because that's the safety on not teaching other people on how to do your business. So you're absolutely correct. These micro decisions are endless, but first we have to establish the parameter. What's that house that you want to architect look like?
Right. And so I think, well, you said something right at the start of that know what you can ask for. I think that's really important because 10 years ago, I think the environment looked completely different than right now, where right now I have multiple people in my phone who are solopreneurs making over $1 million with their company. And I would have never thought that was possible years ago. But so now when I'm creating my own business and I'm thinking, okay, I got to bring team members on so that I can, you know, make more money. It's like, well, really, I don't need more team members. I think I want more team members because I like working with teams. And then it's a lot more fun because I enjoy that type of communication. But like the revenue producing side isn't necessarily directly correlated depending on what I'm doing. And it's like, it shifts kind of the way you're thinking. And so I like that, just being able to ask yourself that question early so you know what is it that I want.
Yeah. And I'm glad you picked that number, because the 1 million is the burnout number. So you can get to a million pretty much by yourself. But if you go above that, you're in burnout. That's just, you know, don't ask me why. That just seems to be what I have seen in my career and in my life, that, you know, I know one person who's got it to pretty much by themselves to 2.3 million, but that's ugly.
Yeah. And they're probably very busy at that point. Cause there is a cap, right, for how much you can actually do.
Yes.
But I think then again, asking what you want, if you are that solopreneur and says, well, I want to be able to make $1 million and I'm good with this, versus actually, I want to impact as many people as possible. Now that's going to shape how you're architecting your business.
So yes, it does. And impacting people is correlating to a revenue goal. But we say impact versus money because we found that a lot of people are, you know, want the money so they can not worry about bills. But that's not really what creates that high energy vibration. A high energy vibration is a sincere desire to be of service and to provide, you know, excellence. Now, if I tell people, you know, let's say, how much is your service? So let's say your service is $5,000 a month. And I say, well, how many people do you want to impact? Can we focus, instead of you making $1 million, on impacting the number of people that would represent that number in the end, right? I think that will be like, what, 15? I'm just, you know, very roughly calculating. It would be like 15 people paying you $5,000 a month, something along the line, 20 people. Then would it be easier for you to think about it? You know, all I need is 15 people, 17 people, 20 people that pay me that much. I want to impact that amount of people. And that gets you to your revenue goal. Or is it easier for you to say $1 million? That's it, baby. That's where I want to be. But that is, again, in the temperament of the business owner and in the mindset of where they are, what's easier for them to believe in.
So I guess as you're helping people with scaling, and whether the impact or just purely revenue, what are some of those roadblocks that you're seeing them run up against that you need to counter?
Yeah, so there's three stages. So there's the building, there's the growing, and then there's the scaling. So in the scaling part particular, it comes at the questions that we're asking now is, what do you want to scale it to and why? So if you want an exit, then we need to ask the question, what's your exit number? Because then we can reverse engineer from where you want to go to where you are today. So let's say you want to exit at 10 million, or you want to exit at 20 million. Let's say you're a $5 million business, or let's say you're a $1 million business. At a $1 million business, unless you really, you know, just discovered some crazy AI stuff, you're not going to get a 20x valuation right now. I mean, that tech boom is gone. But we did have right. that at some point. So if you want a 20 million exit, but you're making $1 million revenue right now, then we know exactly what we need to do to reverse engineer that to get to the valuation at a factor that we believe is reasonable in this market. And then we can look at a million and we know exactly what we need to do. So if we need to get to, let's say, 5 million, and we believe we can get a 4X valuation, then what we have to 4X the 1 million. So we know exactly how, you know, now we know what we need to do with the organizational structure. We need to put a lot of oomph behind the sales. We have to look at what the business units are that are making money. where we set the priorities, we put 18 months plans in place, because right now business is moving so fast, you can't do a 5-year plan. I mean, we're doing 18 to 3 the most.
So as you're looking at, you know, creating those efficiencies, operationalizing more of the business so that you can kind of reverse engineer that plan and make sure you're hitting those targets, what are some of those leadership skills that you're helping to push on people so that, you know, they can actually run the team to be able to execute on that?
Oh, that is such a sneaky question, Chris. Yes. So oftentimes the leader became sort of the accidental leader just because it's the person that had the idea that set up the business and then became successful. Boom, they're there. Then they do a Colby or 360 or Myers-Briggs or whatever that is, or and they think they're Gandhi and they're being told they're a prick. That's a shock, right? Because you're like, well, but everybody tells me I'm so good. Being a leader of a larger company that's heading toward an exit is very, very different than leading your $1 or $2 million business where you're still the god to everything. The objective of, you know, you cannot lead from behind. So you cannot be the one who pushes everybody. You have to be the one in front of everyone. So now the question is, if you want to exit a $20 million company, what does someone like that need to know, be or do, to be able to do that? Now you're realizing that there's tremendous gaps in your leadership skills. Because if you want to get from 1 million to 5 million, you need more people, you need better systems, you need better operational structures, you need to have an organizational chart that is, you know, room for growth, you need people leading people. And you cannot do this all by yourself, because you have to figure out what you're best at and where you create the biggest value for the company. And maybe you're not even the leader. Maybe you are better as the chairman or the CEO, and you need a president or a COO or a CFO who runs things, because that's just not your skill set. I mean, Elon Musk is a pretty shitty leader, but he's a genius. Elon Musk should not lead people, because he believes that his focus on this singular idea that he gets so obsessed about is how everybody else thinks. And he believes that people should live and sleep at the office to help him achieve that one singular focus. Well, we see that it isn't so by the class action lawsuits and, you know, all the stuff that's happening. So Elon Musk is smart enough to bring people in that he knows are subject matter experts at certain things. So he can do his how do we get people to Mars idea, and has other people run the day-to-day operation. So what, to answer your question, what happens in scaling is that there's a misconception of the leader of what their actual true capabilities are. And at that point, nobody wants to tell them the truth. And that inevitably leads to some sort of a plane crash somewhere where the leader, you know, we have one person that is a phenomenal marketer, and he just markets and markets and markets and markets and closes deals and closes deals. He's not an operational person and not a financial person. So now there's cash flow issues. Now there's operational holes, because the whole foundation we were just talking about that we built a house on just doesn't exist. We're in the penthouse of a dream house. And now this owner's in real trouble. So you want to be very careful about surrounding yourself also with people that hold you accountable or that call you on your shit, if you don't mind me saying it bluntly. It's like, dude, you're full of it. That's never going to happen. Great idea, but no. We need to build this first. Yeah, it's easy to go in the penthouse. I want to drink champagne in the penthouse. Are you kidding me? Who wants to be in the cellar, plug the hole from the plumbing with the stinky stuff? Nobody.
So as you're looking at that and working with leaders, like, what are the systems, I guess, you start prioritizing to make sure that you don't run into some of those blocks that you often see leaders run into?
Yeah. So the blocks typically are, believe it or not, that there still is, you know, what's commonly referred to as imposter syndrome, worthiness, lovability, or, you know, do I even still have a right to be here? Like, I got there so fast, or this all happened to me. You know, they either cover this up by this grandiose gesture that is so transparent that you say, dude, you know, get a grip on yourself. Nobody believes that. Or they're covering for their insecurities through some sort of method, you know, either being angry or overworking or hiding behind certain things. So the first look that I always do is at the leader and the capacity of the leader. And I say, well, what is it that you want to create? And then let's take a look at you. Where are you with that? I have a client that is in the clothing recycling business. And it is such a fabulous, it's two women. And, you know, and I look at this and I can see how that just stepping in and then making the hard decisions sometimes is very difficult because they're not taught how to do that. So I can only help them to get the business to where that business needs to go if I also help them as leaders, as women leaders, to step into that part where they don't feel that they're mean or unjust or that they're not the nice girl. So what does a leader of a company that has a $10 million revenue look like? You need to become that, on whether you're a man or a woman or whatever, or however you identify. And then we can build it. But so the personal leadership is one thing. The second thing is the systems. That systems have been built that haven't been looked at for a really long time. And you carry all this baggage of, you know, well, we used to do it that way. Well, that was 10 years ago. Do we have a process that we can build for now that is automating that? So we need to look at the processes. And then finally, what is the vision? Again, where do you want to go? And then is who we have and what we have adequate? And when that happens, and especially in the scaling, because that, you asked that, Chris, it happens that a lot of the people that got you through the build and grow phase don't want to scale. And now suddenly you have the guys that have been with you for all this time leaving. And you go, and it feels terrible. But what brought you here isn't going to get you there. So you have to get clear where there is, who you need to be, and then reverse engineer what gets you there.
Yeah. And so I guess in that process, what like KPIs, things are you looking at within the company? Because I know not every entrepreneur knows what numbers to look at. And so one, there's probably like an education process, right? Like, hey, these are the numbers and this is why they're important. But are there certain ones that you kind of go to regardless of the industry or the space that business is working in?
Well, I actually know Jeff Smith personally, who is like one of the fathers of the KPIs. And I had him on my podcast. And Jeff explains KPIs not as measuring people's performance, but first getting really clear what the KPI is that actually matters and then getting clear why that number matters. So if you say we are measuring our KPI, one of our KPIs is outbound calls, then you would have to say, why? Why does that number matter? Would it not be more important to measure the how long it takes to close the sale and on whether or not we need to shorten that so we can calculate a pipeline? And why is that important? So the KPIs change from company to company because what is it that we want to measure in the order of importance? So the order of importance is if you're realizing that we have a high earning potential in a particular business line, then we need to look at that and we say, what do we measure that actually gives us relevant data for this particular business unit that will help us to make decisions on how we need to operate more efficiently. But if I say I'm measuring outbound calls, then my inclination is going to be to look at my sales force and say, Chris is just not cutting it. The guy's just not making enough calls. You may, however, be the guy who closes the most, Chris. And then you go, well, other people just on the phone, but they don't close. I do half the calls, but I close two times as much. So why are we measuring outbound calls? It doesn't even make sense. So that's the logic. Right. You really have to think through this. What makes sense for you to measure?
And I think, like, in that example, we're looking at outcomes versus outputs, mm-hmm. right? And I think a lot of businesses do fall into the output. Like, what number can I influence just directly that we can, like, check a box?
So it looks good on our website.
Increase that number.
Yes.
Right. And it's like, does that actually get you the goal, though?
Yeah.
So,
true.
Yeah. So you are listed as a thought leader, global thought leader, someone that everyone should follow everywhere. Congratulations on that.
Thank you.
I guess what advice would you have for others just trying to do the same, build up their personal brand and, like, you know, get people to listen?
Yeah. So becoming an authority in your subject matter is not a celebrity and is not an influencer. And especially in our world in marketing, we are often so drawn into the Gary V's and the, you know, Brandon Burchard's and the Grant Cardone's, and we look at the 10X and the this and the that and the that. You have to get very clear. Do you want to be a celebrity? Gary V's business model is celebrity, not influencer, not authority. Gary V's model is celebrity. You know, it's going to be Gary V vodka, because Gary V has an opinion on everything. I don't even know what his business model is. I mean, if I would work with Gary V, I'm like, dude, you know, what are we even doing here? But it's a personal elevated brand, so it's a celebrity model. Then you have somebody like Grant Cardone. So that is an authority and an influencer. So his model is kind of like to be, you know, at the top of his game. Most people like us, most people that are listening to this podcast are probably going to be subject matter experts. So get clear, what are you a subject matter expert on? I am a subject matter expert on architecting growth in these three categories: grow, build, scale. I'm an authority on women leadership. You know, I've spoken extensively about this. I love working women. That is what I focus on. That is my authority. Yes, I can talk on speaking from stage, but I'm not an authority in that. Yes, I can talk about podcasting, but while I might be an authority in that, it's not what I choose to be an authority in. So in order for you to become a thought leader or to get recognized as an authority, you have to determine what you want to be an authority in and what your actual subject matter expertise is. Then you have to find the outlets. You know, right now, I highly recommend podcast guesting or podcast hosting, which is why we're on this call, because both you and I follow that model. Because it gets you in front of other people's audiences. And you build a level of trust over the duration of this interview, because now I'm not a stranger to your listeners anymore. In this whatever half hour, 45 minutes that we're speaking, people are going to be pretty clear on whether I'm full of it or whether I know my stuff. I mean, there's no hiding here on whether what I say, oh my God, I've heard this 1,000 times before, or that's a really good point. So that's authority, but you got to hone that skill and say, what is my opinion on this? I have opinions on things, you know, like I have this idea about niche sizing. So niche sizing, and this is just to give an example on how you build authority. So niche sizing is everybody else says you have to get rich in the niche. I think that's bullshit. And here's why. Because the longer you work, Chris, the more you know. And now suddenly I come to you and say, Chris, sorry, dude, you know, I know you know a lot, but let's just disregard 90% of everything you know and just focus on 10%. You're going to go, Beate, that's just not feeling right. So what if I instead can come to you and say, you know what, Chris, here's how we're going to do this. We're going to do this super smart. We're just going to take everything that you know. We're going to put it under one umbrella, and we're going to take this umbrella, like growth architecture, we make that the niche. And within that, everything that you can do has its purpose. So I am anti-nichesizing. because I think it is a disservice and it creates a lot of confusion. So I can speak as an authority on that, but you have to have an opinion. An authority requires you to have an opinion on something. You have to be for something and you have to be against something so that people know on whether or not what you say makes sense to them or doesn't make sense to them. When you go to a restaurant, you say, I want to eat Italian. But most likely you don't know you want the burrata ravioli. But when the waiter comes and says, we have these burrata ravioli with the truffle sauce, and you go, ooh, that sounds really good. So a lot of times our followers, our listeners, our tribe does not know until they come to us and they hear something that they can agree or disagree with.
Right. Awesome. All right. We're going to move into the final three questions here, with the first being, besides your own, what book do you recommend everyone should read?
I like Darren Hardy, Compound Effect. I like The Challenger Sale. Those are the, and I like the, the $100 million sales book. I'm reading it right now. For some reason, the full title escapes me. Yes, but
Hormozy.
No, it's not Hormozy. Recently I've actually, been looking at the Lynchpin book from Russell Brunson, who I couldn't stand for the longest time. But now that I get deeper into it, the man is a genius, and I'm just gonna. I'm just gonna say it as it is. The man is a freaking genius.
Yeah. Yeah, I would agree with that statement. Next question is, what's next for you professionally?
So I'm going to get really personal on this now. So I just got back from an ayahuasca trip. And for those of your listeners who don't know what that is, it's a psychedelic, it's a medicine, and you go on a journey and it helps you to really kind of get clear on connecting with the universal energy, the life force, the one source that rules everything, which is in us and everywhere around us. And as I got out of this, the first thing that happened is, like, literally a day later, my Facebook account's been hacked and completely deleted. All of it. The Meta Suite, the pixels. I mean, it's all gone, Chris. It's just like gone. 15 years, all the ads, all the data, it's all gone. And Facebook, let's just say, it's not very cooperative on this. So, so what's next for me is to allow myself to get really clear on what is it that makes me be happiest, most fulfilled, and where do I make my most impact? One of the things that stands out, and I was really big on the high ticket stuff and, system creation. And I have clients that I work with, but it's an intensive work. So it's not something where you can do 50 at a time. And I don't really want to do that. But I realized that there's a huge change in the market. There's a lot of people coming into entrepreneurship, into business ownership, and they have no clue what they're doing. So I went to a program called Turn Your Talent into a Business. And so I'm really focusing on helping people to build these business models, these structures. And it's not an online program. It's a done with me over 3 months program, because I realize that during COVID, people kept buying courses and they're sitting on hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of hours of stuff that they can never do because it is too complicated, too time consuming. So they want somebody to be there and guide them through. And so that's what I'm really focusing on, to say, where do I make the most impact? And you make the impact on the ground up. And maybe that is why I'm so interested in Russell Brunson, because what if there was a piece before what I was doing that I, what if there's a piece before this that I was missing that I needed to get to this next level because I was only focused on this other level? So my point is in the what's next question, and I really want to make this so clear to your audience, is this is definitely a time in with this economy, where we are at this time energetically in this world, where you must step back and look at what you do and say, is it working? Is it making me happy? Is there resonance between what I do and what I want to do and the impact that I'm making? And if it isn't, if there's a problem, you must fix it, because the consequences of this are dire. My brother almost died of a heart attack in September. So that was a pretty big wake-up call for my family. He's only 60. And you think about this and you say, well, where am I with this? What am I doing? How do I show up in the world? And then you sit down and you say, what is next? What is next? It's definitely impact, making more impact, and trusting that, you know, I'm leaning into, you know, Michael Singer's Untethered Soul, the surrender experiment, highly recommended for everybody listening. It is, what if you stopped pushing and you lean into yes, and you allow things to unfold? So that's kind of where I'm right now. I don't even know if that's an answer, Chris, but I'm just going to put it out there.
That's great. So finally, where can people find you?
Yes. So for anybody listening, if you heard something we say, I should talk to her, please go to uncoverysession.com and schedule your complimentary 15-minute session. Make sure you mention this show while we're at this. I urge all of your listeners, please go to wherever you pick up this podcast, give it a 5-star review, and subscribe to it and write a comment. The comment is absolutely critical, because it tells the algorithm, the opinionated AI algorithm that has no human element to it whatsoever, that this show matters. So even if you just put a heart in it, the algorithm goes like, oh, people love it. Great. Or they listen to the entire episode. So do this for Chris, because it's a labor of love, and give him some love back. And the second thing you can do is you can go to a quiz that we just launched, and that's called What's Your Talent Worth? Where you can calculate, I actually created a mathematical formula to tell you what your talent is worth in this market. It gives you an actual number.
Oh, awesome. We'll get those linked up in the show notes. And everyone else can go check that out and make sure to leave those hearts as comments. So that'll be great.
Don't you love that? I don't know if it's a purple heart or a green heart that signals that they listen to the entire episode. And I said, everybody can do that.
Oh, there's a whole coding system. I didn't know that.
Yeah, we learn something every day.
Yeah. Awesome. All right. Beata, thanks for joining me. It's been great.
Thank you so much for having me, Chris.
If you enjoyed today's episode, I would love a rating and review on your favorite podcast player. And for more information on how to build effective and efficient teams through your leadership, visit leadingforeffect.com. As always, deserve it.